in Randolph County and from us around. Everybody loves that smooth sound. Radio Ransparta means WHCO.
Car folks on the go, it's 1230.
That's WHBO.
We love to have you with us. We want you all to know you're welcome on WHCO. Randolph County Radio.
From Rio Country, 1230 and 97.3 WHCO. Time now for the People Speak program. We're taking your calls at 443-2121 or toll-free 877-443-1230. Now, the People Speak.
Good morning, 927 on this sunny Friday. I'm Jeff, this is The People Speak, and today we'll be talking with Congressman Mike Moss. Congressman, how are you doing?
Good, Jeff, how are you?
I can't complain. The weather's warmer.
Well,
and
The weather's good, but I am in D.C. dealing with a lot of the issues out here and right now, and it's because the flight changes and stuff like that. When you're out here, you don't really get to go home the day that you stop voting because they vote up in the evening, and just kind of keeps you, but that's all right. We need to get work on some stuff. I wish that all the things we're working on would actually be done in a bipartisan manner instead of. It reminds me right now a whole lot of like how Mike Madigan coordinates in the state of Illinois, and so that's frustrating. But you know, we were called in this week yesterday and to deal with the criminal justice reform, but the Nancy Pelosi's bill that was out there, they did pass it on a partisan roll call yesterday. But that's not what the one we're going to be dealing with is being moved by Senator Scott, who is really, and it'll have some of the things that Nancy had in it, but there's some other things that are, when you're working on criminal justice reform, you know, you've got to make sure that what you're doing is right and not an emotional reaction to a very heinous situation that occurred. You know, nobody felt it was right that what happened to, George Floyd, and it was, you know, so as soon as that started occurring and the issues started coming up and the protests and the other things, you know, I started reaching out to my local law enforcement mayors and all of my NAACP leaders to get meaningful discussion and on, okay, how do we cure this? You know, the police officer that did what he did, he had quite a big record, and so there's some things that we need to do, but we need to make sure that we're not punishing good police officers because of the actions of a few. And, you know, but yesterday the bill that the Democrats wanted to vote out, it was written by Democrats only. Not a single Republican amendment was accepted, and it included provisions that, one, would remove protections for good police officers. So I don't know if your listeners know this or not, but a police officer basically has liable separability, basically, and that's not the right word. I'm trying to remember the word. But basically, a police officer cannot be sued personally for doing his actions appropriately as a police officer. I'm going to explain that. So if you do something as a police officer that is against company policy, against your precinct, against your city, against that, or against how you've been trained, or against the law, then you can be liable. But if you are just simply doing your job and you have a criminal, somebody that's disobeyed the law, you take them down correctly, you arrest them, you can't be sued for doing that. This bill wanted to remove that. Well, I'm going to tell you, one of the best descriptions I heard on this issue was a guy that is in Congress now, but he was a sheriff for many years. And he said, let me tell you what you're asking me to do as a police officer. You're asking me as a police officer to stand in the gap between the criminal and you, the taxpayer, to enforce the law. I don't mind doing that, and I accept that as a duty of being a police officer. But I don't want to stand there with my wife and child. And by taking this away, you force me to stand there with my livelihood, my wife, and my child. Because now, if all of a sudden someone wants to sue me for doing my job, not for doing my job incorrectly, for doing my job, they would then be able to do that, and they could take my home, they could take my livelihood, they could take my wife's home, like my children's home. And so this is some of the things that are being put in there that are just, you know, it also would increase federal government's overreach in state and local matters. Now, let me tell you that there is one thing that we're talking about as a possibility of some sensible, not overreach, but without violating the 10th Amendment. And that would be that if a database, when someone, an officer, has been not convicted, but in his record knows that he did something like excessive force or whatever, and that then is put in a record, a public record that goes and through the Department of Justice, but it has to be sure, you know, it can't be just somebody calling in with a complaint. Okay, it has to go through a process. So there's a proper way to handle it, and then it's put in their jacket. Now, then that is one available for other police departments in case they're wanting to hire a policeman, and he says, well, I worked here, but then it's on a public record so that the person hiring go, oh, wait, you've got kind of a bad record here, and we'll go with another officer. Or also, if there's several incidences like this guy had of excessive force and nothing is done about it, the DOJ, Department of Justice, on the federal level, then can come into the local municipality and say, why is this officer still working? What's the problem here? So, you know, these type of things that are sensible, you know, banning chokeholds, that's one we need to do. But the reality is they don't teach chokeholds anymore at any academies I've checked on. Let me also say that they not only do they not teach it, they most municipalities and most police departments, matter of fact, banned it already, and many states have banned it already. So I have no problem with that. Increase accountability for and transparency. That's what I was talking about a while ago. And you know, make some investments in grants to municipalities for training. But. Any rate, we're going to try to keep working on this. Right now is not the time for partisan games. We've got to make sure that we need to foster a real conversation between law enforcement, our black communities, our minority communities, so that we can get a fix on the long-term problem. But let me add to this. The First Amendment right to protest and to state your opinion and to do all of that should be defended to the hilt. Everybody should have the right to go out and protest. But protesting does not mean damaging property, destroying personal property, attacking people. That has to be stopped. And our local police, our local mayors, should do everything in their power, which is what they were sworn to do, to make sure that if somebody vandalizes something, that they are processed to the full extent of the law. And I don't care whether it is in a territory, which D.C. is, or a city, regardless of where that city is. Folks, none of the heads of the NAACP that I've talked to says, oh, that's the right thing to do. It is not. And also, when I've talked to them, and they, you know, these groups that are talking about defunding the police, everybody I've talked to with the NAACP is not for defunding the police either. They are for doing the things that I was talking about just recently.
Right. You can't remove the police. Society would devolve into chaos.
Right. And this neutral zone or whatever it's called, CHOP, out in Washington State, you know what the first thing they did was? They established borders. But yet they don't want borders. Then you know what they did? They went to the local shop owners, and the leaders of these groups would say, you know, you can pay us and we'll protect your business while this is going on. I don't know if you know that or not, but that's like having law enforcement. Just saying. But unfortunately, there, when we study what's going on out there, and the governor and the mayor of that town need to get a handle on that. We've got a couple people from Southern Illinois that actually live, a person I know that's from Murfreesboro. She grew up in Murfreesboro, and her parents are still in Murfreesboro, and she lives just up the hill from where that's going on, two blocks. And it is chaos out there. And apparently there's about 30 different people that believe they're the ones in charge of that. And it is, and it needs to be straightened out. It really, really does. And it is just, it's awful. It's awful.
Right. So, I agree with that. I'll tell you what, let's take a quick break here, and we will come back and talk some more with Congressman Mike Bost here on The People Speak this morning. We'll be back right after this. Talking today with Congressman Mike Bost. And Congressman, we're talking about police reform. It's just one of the many things that's going on right now. That's true.
There is a lot of things going on. You know, we're monitoring closely any uptick now in COVID. However, what you also want to realize is the COVID cases that are being reported, you're getting a lot more reporting because we're doing a lot more testing. And we're able to go to hotspots. I think there's going to be a press conference. If it isn't happening right now, it will happen sometime today from the team, the COVID team, and not the president, but with the vice president, and on how they're going to start dealing with hotspots, but without shutting everything back down to a level to where, you know, where we're blowing our economy up. And speaking of that, you know, we're in a state that has, you know, and I got very upset with our governor on the way he's handled it in the state of Illinois, treating everybody around Illinois like Chicago, and then causing us to lose certain things. One of the worst things that we lost from the people that in your listening area is the Great American Trap Shooting Competition. They took it over to the other side of Missouri. Because they, and if everybody knows, in our area, if there's one place you social distance, it's when you're trap shooting. Okay. You're not going to be close to people. It's fairly easy to trap shoot. The facility there is big. It has plenty of room for everybody to do exactly, that, you know, they've opened up campgrounds and everything like that. And literally that's, you know, what the closest you get is the camping that's up there. But getting rid of this, you know, we've made a lot of big investments in the state of Illinois, and that was one of them, to have a successful program there. And, you know, losing this competition and taking it elsewhere, you know, that's about $20 million that it brings to the state's economy. We've got to make sure that somehow we've got to, our local legislators understand that, but we've got to get this drilled into our governor's head that everything's not Chicago in the state of Illinois. And I'll give you an example of that as well. Some things that are also going to affect our economy. The day that the governor made it known that neither state fair was going to operate or the county fairs were going to operate, that day was when Missouri announced that the Sykeston Rodeo was going on as always, and they were going to have open bar up until the time of the event starting, and they were advertising, and the big crowds are coming, and what's happening? Their economy is going to not suffer, because I'm not wanting to do foolish things, but I am wanting to. We need to understand that, you know, this is real, and if you feel unsafe with COVID, and you don't want to go out, this is a free nation, and you can stay home. And that's okay. But the people that, one, are not in a situation where they are going to, even if they did get it, it would be not be they don't have pre-existing conditions. They know they'd have to deal with it. We've got to go back to work. We've got to go back to living, and we've got to, we can do it wisely. But that's a whole lot of the arguments that are still going on here in D.C. I actually joined in a lawsuit this last month towards Nancy Pelosi because, I don't know if we discussed this on the phone last month or not, but to vote by proxy, and we're suing the speaker because we believe it's unconstitutional to allow voting by proxy. And here's why, especially because she allows the proxy votes to count towards a quorum. Now, I want you to think about what I'm saying here. Now, let me say that in the Article 1, Section 5 of our Constitution, it says that to conduct business in the House or the Senate, a quorum must be present. Likewise, in committees, a quorum must be present. Present and a quorum call in the dictionary means physically, and you can look it up, it means physically present for a quorum call. Proxy, if you read it, means voting when not present and allowing somebody else. So therefore, you have a conflict right there that's a violation of the Constitution by allowing proxy voting. It is ridiculous the amount of members, not members who would be exposed, but young members that say, oh, I'm scared to go in, and I don't want to have, and if I do go in, we need to have this, and we need to have that, and everything like that. The older members are like, you know, we were elected to these jobs. You knew what the Constitution said when you were running for these jobs. Well, some did. And we now have to go to work. We have a country that we have nurses, we have truck drivers, we have grocery store workers. The list goes on and on. Doctors, of people that had to go to work through this time. Congress has worked through war. You know that during the War of 1812, when the White House or when the Capitol was being burnt and attacked, Congress met in a hotel, in person, in a hotel. When they had the pandemic of 1918. Guess what Congress did? They either met, or the days that they had so many people sick, they didn't get a quorum call, so they didn't meet. That's how they handled it. It was like a six-week period that they couldn't get a quorum call. So they did not conduct business because they didn't have a quorum present. That's what the Constitution says. So, folks, we as Congress need to come back in and actually work and be present. Not have someone else. And I'm going to tell you, as your representative, they will not. If I can't make it, I'll be absent and not vote. But I will not give my vote that you gave me the power to cast up to some other person from another district. My job is to be here when I have a committee. My job is to be here when session is in. My job is to be here to represent the people of the Illinois 12th. And by golly, I'm going to do that job. Until the people of the Illinois 12th, by reason of a vote, say, you're not. And I am really frustrated with just such a blatant act that is totally against the Constitution, but yet the American people and the media haven't caught on to the fact that this is not right. It's not constitutional. I don't care if a pandemic going on or not. The Constitution is the anchor by which we hold to create each law. Now, if some of the members feel that we need to change that to use these virtual meetings and say, okay, we are going to do that, there is a procedure you can do that. What you do is you talk to the states and get your state legislature and the local and the state governors to pass an amendment to the Constitution. And then we can vote to say that we're going to open it to an amendment, and then the states have to ratify it, and then we can come back and change it like we have for so many other things. But I don't think it's one that needs to be changed. I think we need to be present just like we have through our history. And so I'm kind of got on a soapbox there, but right. It is frustrating to watch the people try to change our way of doing business because of a pandemic, and instead of and not do it by changing it and not following the Constitution as they do it.
Yeah, the Constitution was developed to maintain the style, the way of life of this country, and to just randomly change it all the time like that, that has been brought up, you know, and as you mentioned, a lot of different things, it just doesn't work that way.
Right. A lot of people, Jeff, and you know this, claim that we're a democracy. No. We're a constitutional republic. And that means that there is an anchor by which, and though it is the will, it, we are ruled by the people, we the people, we are not ruled by mobs. We are ruled by a controlled anchor type of election process with everything focusing to the Constitution. And the Constitution can be changed. And I'm really bothered by a lot of people on social media whenever I talk about this. Of course, some people remember social media is an opportunity for some people that just don't like you for whatever reason to say things that, you know. And whenever I put this out on my social media, a couple of the haters got on there and said, well, no, the speaker has the power and she can do whatever she wants. No, that's not in the Constitution. She can't do anything against the Constitution. She can't. And that's why we got the lawsuit. That's why we go to the third branch, you know, the judicial branch, to appeal to them to say this is unconstitutional. And it'll be interesting to see how that court case turns out. But and here's the danger. If it is ruled that it's unconstitutional, every bill that we've passed since she created this is null and void, and we have to come back and do it again with the people present. So it's really a bizarre time to watch all that stuff going on and everything like that.
I'll tell you what, Congressman, we need to take a break, so why don't we go ahead and do that, and we will come back and talk some more with Congressman Mike Bost here on The People Speak right after this. Welcome back. This is The People Speak again. We're talking today with Congressman Mike Bost. And Congressman, you have talked about several things. What are some of the other things that we could talk about this morning that are going on at the federal level?
Another issue out there that is going on, and I hear it from a lot of my constituents. And not a lot. Most of them understand. But when if they're asking, some people are asking to extend the $600 extra on the unemployment. One, there's two reasons why we can't. We have to be very, very careful as we move forward with any fourth package or anything like that. One is we need to make sure, one, that we're spending the money that we've already allocated before we go out and start putting more in. Two, that $600 extra makes it to where a person can make more money staying at home than going to work. And I've heard from a lot of employers that that's the concern they have. They're wanting to get their business back up. They're under the new opening phases and everything like that. And then all of a sudden, they can't because their employee, and let me tell you that if an employee is offered work and then refuses, they can actually lose their unemployment. So they need to remember that as well. But putting this in, making it go further down the road would do nothing to try to get the economy back and going. So we have to watch what we do. There's another one, people that were talking about the stimulus checks were good. Let's do another $200 or $2,000. Folks, as good as that may seem, somebody has to pay for that. And we're well past your great grandkids paying for it. It's now your great great grandkids that will have to pay for it. And we have to be very, very careful, because if we break our economy, you won't have to worry, because it won't be a constitution-based republic. China will come in and own us. That would be a danger if we go too far with this stuff. This has a whole lot more to do with some long-term plans, I believe, of a imperialist government in China, with the things that we see. And the way, rather than firing a shot, they would monopolize certain key industries that we have to have. And we found that out when we went to get PPEs, when we went to get certain medicine, when we've heard certain medical products. So we want good trade, but we don't want to do it with the countries that try to use imperialism to basically rule the world. That's what imperialism is. But to do it in the by economics before they ever fire a shot. And we've got to be very, very close and diligent from Congress and from the administration to watch very closely which countries we're dealing with and what their long-term plans are.
Right. I've heard since I was a kid, you know, that some foreign leaders have thought that America can't be taken down militarily. They can't stand up to us. They don't have the power, the strength of the United States military. But they say they won't have to do that because they will let America destroy itself, and that's kind of what this could lead to.
Right. And another thing that has happened, and if you watch a lot of those protesters, and let me tell you that, and I'm going to say this again so your audience knows and understands, what happened to George Floyd was wrong, heinous, and that has to be dealt with. But quite often you take a movement which you don't want to disagree with and you give it a good title. It's the same thing that happens in politics when they give a great title for a bill, but then you don't read the bill, you're voting on the title. Black Lives Matter movement, when you really look at, we all agree that Black Lives Matter. We all agree that every life matters. But what we need to make sure is what is the platform in which they're stirring this? The leaders of Black Lives Matter have admitted that they're Marxists. They're admitting that. And they are using allowing these good protests to go really, really bad under that idea of tearing down statues, changing history, or destroying history. And I'm bothered because, one, either they're doing what I just said, or we need to confront our schools of higher learning and our elementary and secondary schools, because if you believe in the cause that Black Lives Matter was what the majority of us believe it was formed for, why would you destroy a statue of Abraham Lincoln or Ulysses S. Grant or the people that actually were fighting for the freedoms of that day? That doesn't make sense to me. And it is either you're uneducated or you are doing exactly what I said, and you're wanting to completely overthrow the government. And if you believe in Marxism, there are other countries you can actually go to and go there for a while, live there, move there. And if it's so good, you won't come back. But I got a feeling that after you're there a little while, you'll realize that when you start down that path, the government has too much control of your life. And that's what our forefathers didn't want when they created this nation.
Exactly.
Well, I really sound like I'm on a box there.
No, we always enjoy talking with you, though. Stay safe in all this, and hopefully we'll get things back into normal here.
You bet. You bet. So.
All right. We will talk to you again next month, then.
All right. Thank you so much for having me on, Jeff.
All right. Thank you, Congressman. Congressman Mike Boster on the People Speak this morning. That'll wrap things up. We will talk to you again next time.